They look alike. They dress alike. Two identical beauties. But one of them has the very devil in her.
Us again. It's episode 61 of the 13 o'clock podcast, and today we're kind of revisiting something we did a while back, sort of. Remember before when we did the like crazy brothers kind of show with like the hoarders and the creepy gynecologists that David Cronenberg movie was based on, Dead Ringers? Okay, we're doing another one kind of like that, but these are two sets of twins, and these are two weird, creepy as fuck stories. I mean, these, I've been wanting to do these for a long time because this is some crazy shit.
Yeah, it's kind of, there's some mystery involved with these.
Yeah, these are two very, very weird stories. And these are both sisters, not brothers. But yeah, so these are two kind of well-known twin stories, and we're going to get into them in a little bit. Super weird and creepy. But first, we have some housekeeping to do, as usual. My latest book, The Faceless Villain, which is a true crime compilation covering unsolved murders from 1900 to 1959. It's volume one. And it is out now in print and ebook version. And the audiobook version, I'm putting the finishing touches on the sound editing. And I will get that uploaded sometime in the next week. So it'll probably be like 2 weeks before it's live, because it takes such a long time to go through quality control and all that business. So it will be available in a couple of weeks. And after it goes live, then I will have 25 codes for free downloads. And a couple of you have already approached me about wanting copies, and I have taken down your name. So when it comes out, you know, you'll get one. If you want one, let me know. Like I said, it'll be 2 weeks, at least 2.5 weeks, something like that. And you have to promise to write a review for Amazon or for Audible or whatever. And then I will give you one. It doesn't have to be super long. It doesn't have to be anything like that, but you do have to write a review for it, and I will give you a free code and you can listen to it for free.
Yeah.
So if you want in on that, just let me know.
And there's a chance after Spooky Empire that we might be able to hand out some books.
Yeah, we were thinking about doing that too, because Spooky Empire, as we mentioned before, is coming up the 27th, 28th, and 29th, 3-day horror convention here in Orlando, Florida. And we are going to be there all 3 days. We're going to be helming the Sick and Twisted panel on Friday evening, and we'll be on a bunch of the other panels. I'm on a Twin Peaks one on Sunday, and there's a couple of other ones. So we're going to be there all 3 days. We're going to be there selling books and signing books and all this other kind of business. So if you want to drop by and see us, you can. Now, if we have any books left over, because I bought some to sell at the convention, if we have some left over, we might be doing like a kind of giveaway or sign books or something like that.
Yeah, they'll be autographed.
So yeah, we can autograph them and send them to you if you want one. So we'll see we'll have to see how many we have left over. And all.
Yeah, the only downside about it is that if we do that, you write a review, you're not really like a verified purchaser.
Yeah, because I think Amazon is kind of like, aren't they weird about that?
I think Amazon's weird about that.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure.
I wish we could give out direct samples free.
Yeah.
Of the books and the ebooks and stuff like that, print books.
Yeah. It seems like a good system that they have with the audiobooks, even though it's all under the Amazon umbrella. I don't know why they don't do all of it, but whatever. Okay. But, you know, that's how that goes. So, you know, there'll be plenty of opportunities for you to read the book if you want to read it. And let's see, what else? If you didn't notice, we put up our latest movie review, which was Excalibur. I just put that up a couple of days ago, so go check that out if you haven't heard it yet. Check out our Patreon, of course, which is patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. And if you want to give a monthly donation, you can. If you would rather give a one-time donation, then you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a little link on the sidebar to a PayPal where you can give some money. And I also want to give a shout out to Dean, one of our YouTube listeners, who gave us another donation.
He's
on
a heavy lifter,
PayPal.
Dean.
Yes. So thank you very much. It is much appreciated.
It's donations like this that keep this show going.
Yeah. And, you know, help us out with all our various things that we need to do for the show.
If you're a fan, please consider becoming a patron.
Yeah, it really does help.
And you can give as little as like $2 or a dollar, you know.
Yeah, any amount is good. So yeah, shout out for that. Now for Dean and for our $10 and up patrons on Patreon, we are doing another Google Hangout. It will probably be this coming weekend, which is I'm either going to do it the 21st or the 22nd, Saturday or Sunday, because we can't do it the last weekend because we'll be at Spooky Empire, so we won't be home. But so, you know, we had a good time last time, and hopefully we'll get some more people to drop by this time and hang out with us for an hour or two talking about whatever, just shooting the shit.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to talk about. If you want to ask us some questions, personal questions.
Then yeah, I'll be able to give you a drink probably too.
That, well, you'll have a drink and they'll have a drink. We can just watch each other drinking over the screen. Yeah, that would actually be fun. Yeah. We should probably do that. And the only other thing I want to say is that if you want to contribute a story to our Halloween special, which will be coming up on Halloween, obviously, then you can still do that. Either email them to gravecake@gmail.com. I'll put a link in the description. Or you can just contact the 13 O'Clock Podcast Facebook page or whatever, and I'll try to get back to you on that. We have several very good contributions that are going to be on the show, but we could always use more. So if you want to do that, you're kind of running out of time, so you might want to do that in the next week or two. So I'm just saying, if you want to do that. And it doesn't, like I said, doesn't have to be a paranormal or anything like that. It's just a scary, creepy story that happened to you or happened to somebody you know, as long as it's true to the best of your knowledge. Then we'll put it on the show, and it'll be a fun Halloween special, and that'll be that. Now, let's get to the topic at hand. We call this Twins of Terror, which I guess sort of applies to both cases. I don't really want to... It's funny because there was actually the first case I'm going to talk about is called the Silent Twins. Their names are actually June and Jennifer Gibbons. And it's weird because I saw this documentary about them that was made for a show. I guess it's on that criminal investigation network on Discovery or whatever. It's called Evil Twins. And I said, well, I don't know if I would go so far as to call the Gibbons twins evil. They were for sure mentally disturbed, probably. They didn't kill anybody or anything like that, but their story is pretty weird.
Where were they from?
Well, they were actually born in Barbados, okay. But when they were small, their dad was in the Air Force, I think, and he got transferred to this little bitty town in Wales called Haverford West. So they moved there when the girls were very little. Now, what ended up happening there? I mean, they seemed like fairly normal babies. You know, as far as twins go, I've always found twins like really fascinating. I have a couple sets in my mom's side of the family, but you know, they're normal and everything like that. But I always thought it was like so fascinating. Like, what would it be like? It was something that I thought of a lot as a kid.
Right.
Because a couple of my cousins are twins.
To have a twin of yourself.
Yeah, to have, like, another one of you. Because they are essentially clones, is what they are.
Same DNA.
Yeah, they have the same DNA. And I mean, even though genetically they're identical, I mean, obviously there's kind of a bell curve of like some twins that are, even though they're genetically identical, they're a lot more similar than some that, you know, that are kind of different from each other. Right. The weird thing about these two, they seemed fairly normal when they were babies. Now, they got moved to this little bitty town in Wales. And evidently, this is kind of where the trouble started, because this small town, it was very white. And, you know, these two girls were black. Okay, so there was kind of a lot of, you know, racism going on at the time. Like I said, this is a very small town. It was very white. It was, like, out in the middle of nowhere. And when these girls went to school, I mean, they seemed like they had been kind of reserved prior to that. You know, they were very close, obviously, as twins tend to be. But when they went to school and started getting bullied by the other children because they were different, it seems like it kind of made them withdraw more into each other's company.
This was sometime in the 70s?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was about this time. Here's the thing. The documentary that I saw about them that was called Evil Twins. Now, they said that the girls had a speech impediment. Now, that's the only place that I've ever heard that said. Every other source that I've seen about them said they didn't have a speech impediment, but they had a very strong Creole accent, and they spoke very good English, but they spoke very, very quickly.
Right.
So they had kind of a weird, like, pidgin kind of language that only each other understood.
Right.
Which happens a lot with twins. They develop their own secret language, and some people that heard it said it sounded kind of bird-like and stuff like that. So because they were at school and they wouldn't really talk to anyone except each other. And then when they talked to each other, it was this weird, unintelligible kind of language. And also, they tended to, their actions like mirrored each other. Like they would sit in the cafeteria and they would eat, but they, you know, they would raise their fork to their mouth and eat like simultaneously.
Right.
And when they would walk like one behind the other and their foot movements were like matched each other, but they right. would walk super, super slow.
They walk slowly, but in step.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it was kind of eerie. Like they had like a reenactment on this documentary. It looked pretty creepy. So I can see why, like, obviously I'm not justifying these horrible asshole children that bullied them because they got worse, you know, right. the more they got bullied because it was kind of like a feedback loop because there's right. like, you know, well, you're black, so we'll pick on you. Oh, but then you start acting weirder and then we'll pick on you even more.
Yeah.
And apparently, you know, they got beat up. They got all this other kind of stuff. And it's kind of sad because the school administrators didn't really know what to do about it. Like, they didn't really do much about it. All they would do was kind of let the girls go home early just so the other kids wouldn't, like, lie in wait for them.
Right.
Like, on the way, on their way home to, like, kick their asses or whatever. And that was kind of all they did. So, you know, as time went on, they got put into, I mean, their parents didn't really know what to do with them because they were getting more and more withdrawn. And eventually they got moved to another school, which was more for, you know, kids with the, you know, developmental problems and things like that. Now, it should be noted that when these girls were given an IQ test, they were extremely intelligent.
Right.
And you can actually tell that from a lot of their diaries and stuff like that, that you could read later on. I mean, even when they were teenagers, the stuff they were writing in their diaries and stuff like that was very adult. And they seemed to have like a lot of insight into their own behavior and into each other's behavior because they had like this weird kind of symbiotic, like love-hate kind of relationship. They were almost like two halves of one person, like almost okay. kind of like they couldn't be one complete person.
Man.
Yeah. And it was kind of, it's kind of a weird situation. So they got sent to this other school and it was, seemed like a little bit better, but then the psychiatrists were working with them and said, you know, maybe it would be better if they were separated because, you know, they seem so, you know, locked into each other and like no one can, no one else can really penetrate into their, this world that they've created. So they had the idea that maybe we should separate them. So they separated them and they both immediately went into catatonia. And the odd thing was that sometimes they would find the girls in the same position, but they were like at opposite ends of the building. Right. Like they would both be sitting in the same position. Like, yeah. But how could they know? I don't know. Right. But they did.
They're genetically programmed.
Yeah. That was kind of like what their, what right. their thing was. And the thing about them too, is that they seemed, I mean, nowadays it does kind of seem like their behavior seems kind of like schizophrenia a bit. But I don't know if they diagnosed them with that at the time. I think they might have speculated that it might have been that later. They did try to help them. I mean, they did put them in another school and stuff like that, but it didn't really seem to be all that effective. Now, when they turned 15, they decided, because in the UK, you know, when you turn 15 or 16, you can leave school if you want to. You don't have to stay till you're 18 like you do in the US, you know, or at least that's how it was then. I'm not sure how it is anymore. But so they opted to leave school. After that, they pretty much just locked themselves in their bedroom and would not come out. They stopped talking to their parents. They stopped talking to their siblings. And basically, they just sat in their room and they started to not write plays, but they started to act out plays. They had all these dolls. And they would make the dolls talk to each other and they would like reenact these really like operatic, violent sort of scenarios with these dolls. And most of the stuff they came up with, they, for some reason, they were super fascinated with the United States, and particularly American teenagers.
Yeah.
They were super fascinated with like Malibu and like the whole California kind of thing. And even though they'd never been there, they were also super fascinated with crime and criminals, and they seemed very seduced by like this kind of crazy criminal behavior. And so after they were, their mom, you know, she would have to like bring food and like leave it in the hallway and stuff like that because they wouldn't come out. And their mom thought, well, maybe they need like another creative outlet. So she gave them some diaries and they started writing in the diaries. And they said the weird thing was that they wrote like tiny, tiny, tiny. They said it was like six lines in one line of the diary. You know what I mean? Like line. So they had this tiny, tiny writing, and they wrote and wrote and wrote. There was just diaries and diaries full, and they wrote books, they wrote novels, they wrote all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And they said the weird thing about it, and they actually sent out like some of their stories and novels and stuff to get published, but of course they all got rejected because apparently they were super, super weird.
Right.
And like one of the girls wrote one called Discomania that was like about this, it was about like a nightclub that made people like, I don't know what it was in there, but it made people go insane and like go super violent and everything like that. And, but like I said, they were super into like all of their stories like ended badly, like with some kind of crime or death or dismemberment or something like that.
I wonder if any of this stuff survives.
I think it does, yeah.
Imagine if you were to make a movie based on their writings.
I would love to see that, actually.
Yeah. Or publish it.
Yeah. I would be curious to read it. Like, there's only like little excerpts that I could find online, like excerpts of their diaries and things like that. Yeah, so apparently they just wrote these really weird things about crime and stuff like that. Now, when they got a little bit older, they met these American boys that were living in Wales. They were teenagers too. I don't know how much older they were than the girls. And they apparently started sort of a weird relationship with these three guys. They had sex with them. They started doing drugs. Apparently these guys were like not a super good influence because, you know, they were petty criminals and stuff like that. But that's kind of what fascinated the girls about these guys.
Yeah.
So there was kind of like a weird thing going on there for a while. Then the boys had to go back to the U.S., like they moved away. And evidently, June and Jennifer were really upset about this. And it kind of all happened that after the boys moved away, all their novels and stuff like that, like all these stories they've been working on were rejected. And it almost seemed like they had this very strange, grandiose kind of idea that they needed to be heard. They wanted the world to know who they were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think they thought that they wanted to get that through their writing, but since they couldn't get that, then they decided to do it through crime instead. So basically, they got together and decided that they wanted to do a spree of some sort. Okay. So they originally started breaking and entering, you know, and the weird thing too is that they would break in buildings, just break the window, they would steal a bunch of shit, and then they would call the cops and say, hey, we just broke into this place, blah, 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 and then they would hang up.
Right.
And they didn't get caught for a while, which I thought was really strange.
Did they actually take stuff?
Yeah, they did.
And kept it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they were kind of like, got kind of a charge out of that. So then they decided that they were going to graduate to arson. So they start going around Wales setting shit on fire.
Man.
And they actually burned down several buildings, did about £100,000 worth of damage.
Damn. And
they did that a bunch of times until they eventually got caught. Now, when they got caught, I believe they were only 18 years old. They were assessed by psychiatrists who found that they were disturbed.
Right.
They thought that they might be dangerous because of these strange, like, delusions that they had and stuff like that. So they said, well, we don't want to put them in prison because of their mental instability. So they ended up, and I'm not sure this was better, but they ended up putting them in Broadmoor, which is a very famous hospital for the criminally insane. And the kind of sad thing about this is that diary entries for the time, like for the girls that they wrote about at the time, when they knew that they were going to be sent to Broadmoor, they kind of had this romanticized vision of it. Like they thought they were just going to be sitting out on the lawn at this hospital, drinking lemonade and writing in their diary and stuff like that. No, Broadmoor is where they sent, like, the Yorkshire Ripper. That's where they sent, like, the Cray brothers and stuff like, you know what I mean? The gangsters and rapists and serial, you know, but insane criminals.
Right.
So that's where these girls ended up. And it's kind of sad because the documentary about them, they actually talked to one of the girls' psychiatrists at the time, And he thought that it was terrible that that's where they sent them. It's almost kind of like they didn't know what else to do with them at the time. Right. They ended up, the sad thing too is that Broadmoor seems to have made them worse.
Yeah.
You know, because they were disturbed when they went in.
And then they lock them up in, but they then lock they them lock up in a cage with a bunch of lunatics. Yeah,
and they separated them also.
Oh, yeah.
So when that happened, one of them started getting violent, which they were really weren't before. I mean, yeah, breaking and entering, yeah, they were setting shit on fire, but they weren't killing people. Violent. They weren't physically violent. But when they were in Broadmoor, one of the girls did attack a nurse. And, you know, they were kind of considered dangerous and stuff like that. Now, they were in Broadmoor for 11 years.
Damn.
They were in there for 11 years. And, you know, their behavior just got kind of weirder and weirder. It's like, you know, they took turns eating. Like, one of them would eat one day and then starve the next day. And then the other one would eat one day and stuff like that.
Weird.
And all this other kind of stuff. Just all this kind of weird behavior. Because, like I said, they had this really strange... Their diary entries, they're just like kind of portions of them online and stuff like that. But some of the stuff they wrote about each other was very weird. And there was always like this perception that Jennifer, who was 10 minutes younger, was actually the more dominant twin. And so they think that maybe June was kind of, that Jennifer was maybe the one that had developed this really bad mental illness and that June was kind of like going along with it sort of, you know, because there's kind of like a contagion thing going on with twins. And that kind of plays into our next twin case, too, because that was kind of a shared psychosis type of thing also. But, you know, there's kind of this really strange relationship between them, like, because there was some, there's shit from Jennifer's diary. She writes about June. They would, like, beat up on each other. Like, they would punch each other. Like, one guy said he saw them, and they were standing out in the yard, like, facing each other. And he said one of them would be, like, "You're Jennifer, pow." And then, like, she would punch her in the arm. And then, "You're June, pow." And then she would, like, punch her in the arm like that. Weird. He said it was just, like, this really weird, like, relationship. And in their diary, you know, June, this was actually June wrote, talking about Jennifer. She says, "She wants us to be equal. There's a murderous gleam in her eye. Dear Lord, I am scared of her. She's not normal. Someone is driving her insane. It is me."
Weird.
You know what I mean? Like, so this is like a fucking, this is a creepy fucking story, right? This is like, it's like a horror movie, but it's real. Then Jennifer wrote in her diary about June, "We have become fatal enemies in each other's eyes. We feel the irritating, deadly rays come out of our bodies, stinging each other's skin. I say to myself, can I get rid of my own shadow? Impossible or not possible? Without my shadow, would I die? Without my shadow, would I gain life, be free, or left to die? Without my shadow, which I identify with a face of misery, deception, and murder." So it's like they were writing this shit about each other, but they didn't talk to anyone else except for each other. So it was like this weird, sick...
They were driving each other crazy.
Yeah, like codependency and shit like that. So then... They get assessed, like, you know, like I said, they're in Broadmoor for 11 years. And apparently, you know, as crazy as it kind of made them, after 11 years, they were like, well, maybe it's okay now that they can be transferred to, you know, a lesser security hospital. And they were 29 at this point. So they were going to send them to this other hospital in Bridge End called Caswell Clinic. Now, apparently... Before they went there, the twins decided that one of them was going to have to die for the other one to have a normal life.
Hmm.
And Jennifer decided that she would.
That
she said she would sacrifice herself. This came to light after.
Damn.
Now, what ended up happening the day they came to transfer the girls from Broadmoor to Caswell, and they pick up the two girls and they put them in the bus... And Jennifer is saying, "I don't really feel very well," and stuff like that. She lays her head on her sister's shoulder, and then she lays her head on her sister's lap, and she's laying there with her eyes open. They get to the Caswell Clinic, and Jennifer is dead.
Weird.
And they have no fucking idea what she died of.
Damn.
Like, all they know that she died of, they said that she had, like, a sudden inflammation of the heart. They did an autopsy, no drugs, no poison, no nothing like that. It was just like a sudden inflammation of the heart. And by the time they got her to the other clinic, she was dead.
She willed herself to die.
Yeah, that's what they think.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about that, and then it came out afterward because it was a journalist who kind of befriended them, you know, later while they were abroad more, and she kind of got a lot of stuff out of them. And then after Jennifer died, you know, June said, yeah, we made a pact, and Jennifer said that she would die so I could have a normal life. And the weird thing is that after Jennifer died, June did have a normal life.
Damn.
They said she started talking. She started acting normal. Eventually they let her out. She moved back to Haverford West in Wales, where her parents were. And she moved in next door to her parents and just acted like a normal person.
Weird.
And it's like, and I'm like, this is the fucking weirdest thing ever. So it was almost like good twin, evil twin.
What if there's something happening like on the level of consciousness and quantum consciousness?
Yeah.
That maybe there's one consciousness inhabiting two bodies.
It kind of seems like that.
And that's not right. It's being divided between two bodies.
Yeah.
But it's the same soul.
Yeah.
Quantum soul. And in some cases, one of them has to go so the other one can live. I don't know. That's kind of weird because there's a lot of normal twins out there.
Most of them are normal. Yeah. Most of them are normal.
They're just crazy, I guess. These two are just crazy. They drove each other crazy.
Yeah. Cause like I said, and this will, I'm going to talk about this again. Like,
just makes me wonder, is that something paranormal? Does that have something to do with?
It almost seems weird enough to be paranormal. Yeah. That's what I mean. This story is always like creeping me out. And it's like a sad story too, because it seems like, I mean, I guess authorities at the time did everything they could, but it seemed like they didn't really know how to deal with this type of mental illness that these girls were suffering from at the time. And it really just seemed like stuff they did to help them just kind of made things worse.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really know how to deal with it because it was so strange. And it was
probably just should have let them go and tried to live a normal life. That's probably, you know, separated them for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when they separated them, sometimes they would just both go into catatonia.
They needed boyfriends.
Yeah. Well, even when they had those three boyfriends, that didn't help because then they got them into drugs and drinking. And
well, if they were good guys, maybe they wouldn't have had that problem.
That's what I mean. They did. Yeah. They fell in with. But like I said, that was because they kind of had that sort of like obsession with criminality and all that kind of stuff. I think they had like a romantic perception of crime and of being, which seems like I said, they
so
had
the other one is still alive?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, June is still alive. And,
wonder if she does any interviews.
And still lives in Wales. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I said, the last thing I saw was from several years ago where they were kind of looking into.
We need to get her on the show.
It would be fascinating because I'm just like fascinated, but like why? Like what the fuck was going on with
that? Maybe she could explain it better now.
Maybe.
She's older now.
And evidently she talks now. Yeah. Because for a long time they couldn't really get anything out of either one of them.
Right.
And they did get a lot of insight from, you know, a lot of the stuff that they wrote in their diaries and things like that. But just their whole relationship seemed so weird and so sick. And it just seemed so strange that Jennifer, you know, like I said, she was perceived as the more dominant twin, even though she was younger. Yeah. So it's almost like she said, well, I'll sacrifice myself so June can come out from beneath my thumb or whatever. It was just like such a weird dynamic between them.
Probably nothing more than two shy, reclusive girls that happen to be twins. And because they're twins, they have a really good ability to drive each other crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
That's what I mean. That's kind of what fascinates me about
their
the whole case.
Their imaginations were running away with them.
Yeah. You know? It was just this extreme love-hate relationship. Like, they couldn't live without each other, but then when they were together, they would just fucking smack each other around. But then they came up with a bunch of, like, crazy shit, too. Like, they'd sit there just with each other and come up with all these stories and all this kind of. Yeah. But it's just a fucking, it's a crazy, crazy story.
Weird.
And I'm actually amazed they haven't made, like, more movies about it or anything like that.
Yeah.
But as you know, I saw the documentary on it, which, like I said, it was on a show called Evil Twins, which I guess is on Investigation Discovery, whatever the fuck that channel is. And it seemed sympathetic, but you know, the fact that they kind of called it Evil Twins, I'm like, I didn't really like that distinction. No. But you know, what are you gonna do? It just seemed
that's
like
good story,
a sad case. Yeah,
that's a good story.
Yeah. Okay, so we're at the halfway point, and we're gonna do a couple of commercials now, and then when we come back, I'm going to talk about another crazy set of twins that this didn't end quite so well. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Hinter Kaifek Bond, the Axe Man of New Orleans, the Cleveland Torso, who put Bella in the Witch Hunt, the Solder Children, the Phantom Killer, the Black Dahlia, Summerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena, by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
There are terrors, real and imaginary. And I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction. Horror fiction. The Rochdale House Poltergeist. Of Fire and Whispers, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Associated Hopeful Monsters. Red Menace. The Five Tenebrous Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, and we're back. Now, the next set of twins we're going to talk about, maybe you guys saw some of this footage. This happened back in 2008, and there's actually a very good documentary. It was on the BBC, and I think you can find it. I found it on YouTube, so, and I'm sure Daily Motion probably has it too. It's called Madness in the Fast Lane, and it has a lot of actual footage of the crazy fucking story that kind of catapulted these two sisters to worldwide notoriety.
Yeah, I remember seeing them on the news.
Yeah.
Out on that freeway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a crazy, crazy story. So these two women, Ursula and Sabina Eriksson, now they were originally from Sweden, although in 2008, I believe Ursula that was living in the United States? And Sabina, I believe, lived in Ireland with her boyfriend and children. Now, up to that point, evidently, they had been completely normal individuals.
Wow.
And, you know, living apart. Yeah. They lived apart. It's, you know, it was fine. They had normal lives.
Yeah, and they were what? How old were they now at this point?
In 2008, I believe they were 40.
Okay. So these are grown women.
These are grown women.
Grown-ass women.
Yeah. Now, in 2008, the one that lived in the United States, which I believe was Ursula, I could be wrong, but whatever. Okay, so she comes to Ireland to visit her twin sister. And for some reason, the two of them being back together for, I don't know how long they had been apart prior to this, but the two of them being back together triggered some type of crazy psychotic episode. Now, the first thing that happened was the two women, for some reason, decided to get on a bus and go to London. They didn't tell anyone why they were going or where they were going or anything, because later on when they contacted Sabina's boyfriend, he's like, I don't know. I didn't know where she went. She just took off, her sister. They took off. So they get on this bus. Now they stop at this, here we call it a rest stop. It's motorway services. So they stop at the motorway services. Now they're acting very strangely. The bus driver says that they're clutching their bags very close to their chest, and they won't let him take them to put them in the storage compartment under the bus.
Right.
And they're acting really sketchy.
Okay.
So he's like, well, I think I'm just going to leave them here because, you know, he thought that there might be drugs or, you know, they might be terrorists or who knows. You know, they might have a fucking bomb in there. They don't know. So they said, well, they just thought they were acting weird. So he's like, well, I'm, you know, you can't get back on the bus. So he decides that he's going to leave them there. Now, there was another woman who, I guess, ran a shop at this motorway services, and she saw them, and she said the same thing. She said they were acting really, really weird, and they were, like, walking around with these bags, like, clutched to their chest, and they were, like, talking to each other, like, all secretive and shit like that. And so she called the cops because she thought they were acting so strangely. Now, the cops came and talked to them, but apparently didn't really find anything amiss, so the cops just left. Now, after the cops left, these women apparently decided that they were going to take off on foot. So they start walking down, like, the middle of, like, the freeway. There's, you know, like a median
the
type
median,
of thing.
Right.
Now, they're walking down the median, which you're not really supposed to do. So, you know, because it's dangerous. So they saw them on CCTV cameras. So they sent a cop to see if they were all right. So the cops get there, and one of the sisters goes booking into traffic.
Running off into traffic.
Yeah, and she kind of gets hit by one car, but she's fine, and then she kind of gets hit, clipped by another car, and she's fine, and shit like that. So then, you know, everyone starts calling for backup. They say there's this woman, and she's running around on the M6. So luckily for us, or perhaps not so luckily, when the main cops arrived at the scene, it just so happened that there was a camera crew, and they were doing a ride-along for the British equivalent of the American show Cops, which is Motorway Cops. So they had a whole camera crew, like a TV crew, following along with the cops.
I saw this.
Yeah, so the cops, they're in the car, and you can see them, and all they know is that there's a woman running around in traffic, and that she might have gotten hit by a car, so they need to go and check out what's going on. So they pull up, and there's already one cop there. And the sister, Sabina, is fine. She's, like, standing there talking to the cops or something like that. You know, both the sisters are fine. They're standing there talking to the police. Now, all of a sudden, and you can see this very clearly on the footage because the TV footage is right there and it's in the documentary. It's a little disturbing. Suddenly, Ursula just takes off into traffic. Now, one of the cops tries to grab her, but she shrugs out of her jacket and runs. And she gets hit by a fucking truck.
Yeah.
And goes under the wheels.
Yeah.
So they immediately think she's dead. It did look like she got killed, actually. And the weird thing, too, is that when she runs out into traffic, like, Sabina is, like, kind of standing there just smoking a cigarette or something like that. And she just goes, oh, look at that. You know, kind of think, well, where the cops are like, what the fuck? You know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
And then Sabina runs into traffic.
Yeah.
And she gets hit by a car and it throws her. And you can see this on the footage, too. She hits the hood and the windshield and part of the roof and then kind of flies off and hits the road. And they show the car afterward. The windshield is busted.
Yeah.
The roof is all dented in and shit like that. So she got hit hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
It gets better from what I remember.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is the fucking crazy. And like I said, you see the footage in this documentary and you just can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And they interviewed the cops, like, who were there and they couldn't believe it. They were just like, what the fuck? And like, you could hear them yelling the whole time. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
So
it looked like suicide. It looked like lemmings.
Well, that's what they thought. They thought maybe it was, well, first they thought it was drugs, but, you know, cause they said maybe they're on PCP or meth or something. We don't know. Or they thought it was a suicide pact. The crazy thing, so the cops go and they, to tend to Ursula. Now, the cop says, he's like, obviously her legs are crushed.
Yeah.
He's like, there's bones
that.
Sticking out and everything like that.
If I remember correctly, wasn't part of the leg left out into the road?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right,
but the wheels went over, like, you know, from pretty much her thighs down, were squished.
Yeah.
And so he said there's bones sticking out and everything like that. He's like, so obviously, you know, she was still conscious.
Right.
Now, Sabina, who had been hit by the other car, she was knocked out for a little bit, but then she woke up. Now, Ursula, even though she couldn't get up because her legs were crushed, she starts spitting at the cops.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
part.
Saying, I know who you are. I know you're not real. And then she yells to her sister, they're going to steal your organs or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Right? So they're like screaming. They're like fighting the cops and her legs are crushed. She's laying in the road with her legs crushed and she's like spitting at the cops and shit like that. And he's like, he's like, love, just calm down. We're trying to help you. You're hurt and all this other stuff. And she's just, you know, and then she's like yelling, like, call the police. He's like, we are the police. Shit like that.
They're going to steal our organs.
Yeah. She thought that. So then Sabina, who had been knocked out and, like I said, broke the fucking windshield of his car, dented the hood and everything like that. She gets up and looks totally fine.
Right.
And she starts hauling ass into the road again. Yeah. And the other cops are like chasing her down going, hey, you know, please don't, you know, an ambulance is coming and stuff. And she just starts yelling and she punches one of the cops and then climbs over the guardrail and goes running across the other side of the motorway. Like the other people going, and they're just like flipping out. He's like, you know, not only are these girls, you know, these women hurt. He's like, but, you know, there could cause accidents. Like on the motorway, we're trying to, you know, contain the situation.
Right.
So a couple of good Samaritans who had been stopped by got out of cars and kind of helped the cops wrestle this chick. Because the guy was like, this woman, he's like, this is why initially they thought they were on drugs or something like that. He's like, because this woman was unbelievably strong.
Right.
It took six people to subdue her.
Whacked
I mean,
out.
She was flipping out and they kind of like had her up and she was just like screaming, help, help, call the police. And he's like, we are the police. And she was like, she's like flipping out. And finally they got her to the other side of the carriageway and they kind of, they strapped her arms and legs and everything. She's still screaming and everything like that. Then suddenly the ambulance gets there and they sedate her because they're like, you know, obviously we can't take her like this because she's just like, she's hulking out.
Right.
So, okay. So Ursula, the one whose legs were crushed, obviously they have to take her to the hospital. She's in critical condition. Even though she was still conscious and she was yelling and spitting at the cops and everything like that. Yeah. What the fuck, man?
I don't know.
So Sabina, they sedated her. They took her to the hospital. She was in the hospital for 5 hours. They checked her out. She didn't have any major injuries, unbelievably.
Damn.
Also, no drugs or alcohol in her system. So they were kind of surprised. They checked out Ursula also no drugs in her system or alcohol either.
So what happened?
That's what I mean. No one knows.
No one knows.
So, but, oh, it gets better.
Okay.
So they let Sabina out of the hospital after 5 hours because she doesn't have any major injuries, even though she just got fucking hit by a car and thrown around like a rag doll, as you can see on the video. Now, they take her to the police station afterward because, you know, she's kind of, you know, obstructing traffic. She hit a cop and all this other stuff. I mean, she didn't hit her hard, but, you know, she kind of pushed her over. So they take her there and they keep her in custody for a couple of days. And they have, you know, psychiatrists come and talk to her. They have other, you know, cops come and talk to her and everything like that. And they actually, since the TV crew was still kind of following the story for the show, they actually have a lot of footage of Sabina at the police station.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she's in the police station, and this to me is like the creepiest part of the whole thing, she's acting totally normal. She's totally normal.
Right.
And they said, like all the cops and everything like that were talking to her and everything. They said, you know, she was seemed like a little odd, but not crazy, not, you know, she was acting totally, she was kind of flirting with the cop and like, oh, how does my hair look? And she was just acting totally, totally normal. And I mean, the only weird thing she said, and they have her on tape saying this, she says something like, oh, in Sweden, we say that it's never just one accident. There's always going to be another one, maybe two.
Right.
Like that was the weirdest thing she said.
Right.
But most of the other shit she said was like totally normal. Now, the cops found it odd that she did not ask about her sister at all. He said she just seemed kind of concerned about, cause she was kind of just still in a hospital gown and, she was kind of mad cause she had to take her jewelry off and she's like, I don't look pretty anymore. And that kind of thing. He's like, she seemed kind of, you know, self-centered, but, not weird, not crazy or anything like that. She was acting totally normal. So they kept her in custody for a couple of days and they said, well, she seems fine. The psychiatrist said she seemed fine. She seemed normal. So they let her go. Now, the next day, she goes to Stoke-on-Trent, and she's walking down the street. These two guys that had been drinking at a pub, they noticed her. They said she kind of stood out. She had this big puffy jacket on, and they said she had, like, all of her belongings, like, in this clear plastic bag. And he said she looked lost, you know, like she was in trouble or something like that.
Right.
And they were walking a dog, and they were kind of like, hey, you all right or something? Because she said something. She's like, oh, that's a nice dog or something like that. So they went over and started talking to her. And she told them, she's like, oh, well, my sister's in the hospital and I have to find out where she is so I can go see her. And then she asked them, she's like, is there a bed and breakfast around here? And they were like, oh, you know, not around here or something like that. Now, one of the guys, Glenn Hollinshead, who was 54 years old, he said, well, you know, he's like, why don't you come to my place? I'll, you know, make you a cup of tea. I'll give you something to eat. And, you know, we can find out where your sister is and I'll find you a place to stay. Good Samaritan, right. You know. So Glenn and his friend, Peter Malloy, who he was with, they take Sabina back to Glenn's house. Now, Peter Malloy, they interviewed him for the documentary, and he said, you know, he's like, the girl was acting, or the woman was acting a little weird to start with, but it was nothing alarming.
Right.
Now, they said the only thing that started to get weird was when they started drinking together and stuff like that. He said, now, she had been smoking cigarettes pretty much all evening. He's like, she takes out the pack of cigarettes again, and she offers each of them one. So they take one. They put it in their mouths. And then all of a sudden she snatches them out of their mouth and she says, don't smoke that. They could be poisoned. And Peter Malloy is like, she's been smoking those all day. And he's right. Like, why would they be poisoned? They're your cigarettes or something like that. And then he said she started acting like super paranoid. Like she was like looking out the window, like she was looking for something. And so at this stage, Peter's like, okay, well, I've had enough of this action. So he left. Now she ended up staying over at Glenn's house, like sleeping on the couch or whatever. And he said, okay, well, in the morning, I'm going to call around and find out where your sister is and I'll drop you off to visit her or whatever. Okay. So the next day, all they know had happened. Okay. So Glenn's neighbor said he sees Glenn come out. So Glenn's neighbor is in the back alley. He was like washing his car or something. Glenn comes out and asks if he can borrow tea bags.
Yeah.
Right. So he gives him some tea bags. He goes back in the house. Less than 2 minutes later, Glenn comes back out the house and says, she stabbed me.
Damn.
And he's bleeding just all over the place. So the neighbor's like, what the fuck? And like, so the neighbor's like calling the cops. And the neighbor says, Glenn's like, I'm dying. I'm dying. And the guy is like, you're not dying. It's all right. And stuff like that. And he said, then Glenn said, will you take care of my dog?
Right.
Which I just thought that was really horrible. Because like the old man was like, so it was this old guy that lived next door. And he was like, I didn't think he was going to die. I mean, you know what I mean? But he did. He died there in the alley. Yeah, he bled to death.
Damn.
This is so fucking crazy.
She stabbed his ass and killed him.
She stabbed him.
And killed him.
And they said,
take care of my dog.
Yeah.
Damn, that's something awesome.
I know. And I was like, oh my God, that's horrible. Okay. And then, so evidently before the cops could get there or anything like that, there was this guy who was driving down the street by there. And he saw a woman running down the street. She was carrying a hammer and she was hitting herself in the head with a hammer.
Damn.
Like she was, and he said there was blood all over her head. Her hair was all matted. So he pulled over like to try to help her.
Right.
He's like, what's the matter with you? What's the matter? And she hit him on the back of the head. He's like, at first I thought it was with her fist.
Right.
He's like, but later it was determined that she had a roof tile in her pocket.
Damn.
And she hit him in the back of the head with a roof tile.
Well, you might need a roof tile.
You never know when you might need that shit, right?
Damn.
So at this stage, the cops were coming and they saw her running.
Yeah.
Now she ran away from the cops and she was on an overpass.
Yeah.
And it was 40 feet over the highway. She jumped off.
Damn.
And she lived.
Wow.
This is like fucking, she's like RoboCop.
Yeah.
These bitches are like RoboCop. Seriously.
Damn.
So she jumps off. All happens. She broke her ankles and she fractured her skull, but she lived.
Yeah.
So finally.
And her sister's still laying up in the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't know any of this is going
doesn't
on.
Doesn't know any of this is going on. So finally.
These bitches are crazy.
That's what I mean.
I know.
So they finally catch Sabina.
Yeah.
And they put her on trial for murder.
Yeah.
For killing
like
Glenn Hollinshead. Like you do.
When you kill somebody, that's what you do.
Now, she was assessed by several psychiatrists, both for the prosecution and for the defense. Both psychiatrists found that she was not entirely culpable. They made different diagnoses, but they were similar. One of them said that she was suffering from what they call folie à deux, which is madness shared by two.
Damn.
Which it's a very rare disorder.
Yeah.
But it happens when you are in proximity to someone who has a mental illness and it infects you
How is that pretty possible?
It does happen. Like I said, it's very rare. And it's not just between, it's not necessarily just happening between
two
people.
So their crazy behavior drives you crazy?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not by a virus? Or
No. I'm saying infected in a metaphorical sense. And the other one called it bouffée délirante.
Oh, shit.
Which actually means, it kind of means delirious flash, or I've also heard it translated as a puff of madness.
Jesus.
Essentially temporary insanity. Now, because these women had no prior history of mental illness, and it only happened when they got together.
Right.
And then afterward, they found no mental illness in either one of them. They both acted completely normal after this.
Could she describe how it happened?
Well, the thing about Sabina is that when they put her on trial, yes, she subjected herself to, you know, the psychiatrist assessed her and stuff like that. She would not speak in her own defense. She basically just said, no comment, no comment, no comment. She said nothing.
Even during the evaluations?
I don't know about that. Okay. They just said in the trial, she didn't speak in her own defense. She wouldn't say anything. She just wouldn't comment. So no one really knows what the deal was. But like I said, when she was assessed, they didn't find any trace of mental illness. Same thing with Ursula.
So what happened to her?
They actually, the judge wanted to, he said, well, she was eventually convicted of manslaughter because it was diminished responsibility.
Right.
The judge actually wanted to put her away for an indeterminate amount of time.
That's
life. Well, because he said, I want to make sure that she's safe before she's let out.
Right.
But because there was some kind of legal thing where they couldn't really do that because now she's not mentally ill and stuff like that, she ended up only serving 5 years, as far as I know. And she was supposed...
What country was this?
UK. Only she was supposedly let out on parole in 2011.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about her since then. I'm pretty sure she went back to Sweden after she was let out. And I think Ursula was the one whose legs were crushed.
Yeah.
She was in the hospital for 3 months. And then when she got out, she went back to the U.S. Yeah. And as far as I know, neither one of them have exhibited any of this type of behavior.
Five years for that? That's only the U.K. does it go down
that. Well, the family happen. Of
in
that...
In the U.S.? Louisiana, yeah. 40 years. She'd have gotten 40.
Yeah. The family of the guy that was murdered were upset. They said they understood that, yeah, she was crazy and stuff like that. But they're like, you know, he's like, they talked to the guy's brother, like on the documentary. He's like, you know, oh, my brother doesn't get to have a life. And they just got to go back to what they were
You could have doing. A brain tumor in your head in the United States. And they go, well, you did it. We can't trust you. We're going to kill you.
Well, yeah, that's what, and I think people did comment like on some of the YouTube videos showing it. So like, they'd have just shot you here probably.
Yeah, but, you're crazy. That means we're going to have to kill you.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird because it seems like in the case of the Silent Twins, these two were put in fucking Broadmoor when they probably didn't need to be.
Yeah.
And then in the case of these two, it was kind of like they were kind of let go when they probably shouldn't.
Ah, she's crazy. Let her go.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like I said, obviously she didn't seem crazy or they wouldn't have let her go. But, you know, yeah, you don't know what people are going to do. She seemed normal, but I don't know. And like I said, that was the creepiest thing to me is when they showed the footage of her in the police station. She did seem totally normal. I wouldn't have thought she was crazy. She didn't seem crazy at all. But yeah, so that was kind of weird. But it's weird because shared psychosis, like I said, it is a thing. It's very rare. Yeah. They talked to a guy on the documentary who was kind of like a big clinical psychologist and stuff. He said, I have assessed like 500, 600 cases or something like that in my career. He's like, I have come across one case of that. Of folie à deux, where it's a shared psychosis. Because if they said it happens a lot, they said it usually happens with siblings that are very close, like twins, happens with married couples that are unusually close or within very close families. They said it can happen in a whole family. And actually there's a case in Australia. I think they're called the Tromp family, T-R-O-M-P, I think is their names. And there's a case in Australia going on, it's either still going on or it was going on last year because I was just reading about it in the Australian paper that it was a whole family. And they said it's usually the dad flips out first. It's usually like paranoid delusions. They think, you know, aliens are going to get them or the government is out to get them or something like that. And it'll rub off on like the wife and kids. And that's
what faulty information into other people. And then, you know, you do that over a long period of time.
Yeah.
You know, that faulty information kind of adds up and that person becomes faulty. I guess. Well,
yeah, and especially if you don't have a lot of interaction with normal people.
Right.
I think it happens a lot, like in relationships that are isolated. Like I said, it probably happened in the case of the Silent Twins because they didn't really talk to anyone. Same thing if you're around a
person who's intensely evil.
Yeah, it can rub off on you. I mean, because humans are a social species. Right. I mean, I'm actually surprised it doesn't happen more often than it does, but it is very rare. It also, they think it also might have happened. You know, remember that actor Randy Quaid?
No.
Okay, Randy Quaid, some of the listeners might remember who he was.
Oh, no, he is.
It was Dennis Quaid's brother, like less famous brother. He was in a bunch of movies too. He was kind of a comedian. In 2010, him and his wife apparently have this shared psychosis thing.
Yeah.
They think that there is a cabal of assassins called Star Whackers.
Okay, yeah.
Who are trying to assassinate him. And he thinks that these Star Whackers were responsible for the murders of David Carradine and Heath Ledger.
Okay.
That both Heath Ledger and David Carradine were killed by Star Whackers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they think that...
Do they have any special outfits that they have to wear to be a Star Whacker?
Now I wonder.
But
Star Whacker uniform.
But it looks like a Sith outfit.
I hope so.
Yeah.
With a no sign over it.
Black robes. Crossbows. Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so Randy Quaid, apparently, I didn't know about this until I started researching this. When I saw it linked, I was like, Randy Quaid, what happened to him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. He thinks he's important enough that someone would want to assassinate him and his wife. And apparently it rubbed off on his wife, too, because now she believes that shit also. So, like I said, this story, they probably never know. The two women are still alive, as far as I know. I think Sabina is back in Sweden now. Hasn't made a peep. I think Ursula moved back to the U.S. because that's where she lived. And I don't think she's made a peep either. And apparently, they're fine.
Damn. Peeps come in a pack of six, don't they?
Well, I guess it depends. Is it six? Or I thought it was more than that.
Yellow peeps or blue peeps?
They make all colors. Oh, how about pink peeps?
Okay. Oh, that's a good story, though, Jenny.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I didn't make it up or anything like that.
No, but you brought it to me.
Okay. Truth is stranger than fiction. That's what they say. All right. So we're getting to the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed this, again, rambling. We are always rambling.
Yeah.
I guess that's why people like us, though.
Yeah. I got a little bit of a headache, so I couldn't ramble all that much.
No.
No, I woke up with a headache or something.
Lord, you were born a rambling man.
Oh, man. That's a good one. Now you
Anyway, so that'll do it for episode 61. If you like the show, please remember to like, share, subscribe, and all that other kind of stuff. Share around on your social media, you know, get other people listening to the show, turn them on to it. And also, if you'd like to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, which is at 13 o'clock podcast, and give us a monthly donation. If you would rather give a one-time donation rather than monthly donation, you can go to our blog, which is, I don't remember what it is, 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. I think that's right. And there's a little PayPal link on the sidebar, so you can just click on that and give us a buck or two, buy us a cup of coffee. That'd be nice. And also be sure to check out our last movie review, which was Excalibur, and send us your Halloween stories for the Halloween special, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And that'll do it for this episode. See you next Tuesday.